you know, I was kind of smart aleck. He said, well, what are you doing running from the Taliban? And he said, well, that's exactly right. So he studied at the University of Alaska, and, you know, when he ran out of money and was in danger of getting deported, I offered him a place to stay and helped him out with his tuition. And he graduated with a degree in biology about 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. And we applied for political asylum for him, and he's now a green card holder. He's on his way to becoming a U.S. citizen. He's always wanted to be a doctor, and he got into the WAMI program here in Anchorage, and he's first-year student, medical student now.
And so now he's trying to get his family to Alaska?
Yes. In the spring, his dad started getting visits from Taliban agents at his dental surgery, which is just north of Bagram Air Base. Things are pretty alarming. And then we hired, or Amal hired, Margaret Stock of Cascadia Cross Border Law, who's has an office here in town. Margaret suggested that we apply for humanitarian parole for his families. She said, well, it's a long shot, but, you know, that's the only thing I can think of. And she suggested, well, you can try five of them. You know, it's kind of expensive. It's $575 a piece to apply for parole. It took Ramal and I, you know, about less than a minute to decide we would just apply for all 17.
Yeah. How would you choose?
Yeah, you can't. You know, it's kind of like Sophie's Choice. You know, like, well, what are we going to do? I'm choosing them all. So we chose them all. And lo and behold, the Humanitarian Affairs Branch of the USCIS granted all 17 of them paroles.
17 members of his family. Are they all immediate family members?
Pretty much. It's a mom, dad, sisters, brothers, and in-laws, and three grandkids. But the paroles came through about the 24th of August. So it was about 10 days after the Taliban enrolled into Kabul. And the U.S. Embassy had shut down. The parole stated the embassy in Kabul is closed, so if you can make your way to a third country, let us know, and we'll conduct the interviews in this third country. And in this case, it's Pakistan. So they managed to, they got some Pakistani visas, and they crossed into Pakistan through the normal road checkpoints about 6 weeks ago, something like that. But they've been unable to get interviews at the Islamabad embassy, U.S. embassy in Islamabad. And it's been really, really difficult to find out why that is, whether they're just overloaded and understaffed. And trying to talk to the USCIS or the U.S. State Department is like talking to a wall. You can't get any answers from anyone.
Where are they living now?
They're near Peshawar. They found place out of town to rent. We've been, the good thing about them being in Pakistan is that we can send them money, whereas once the Taliban took over Kabul, you couldn't send two nickels into Afghanistan. Everything is really tight. In Pakistan, we're able to send them money, so they basically, we think, are in a safe place. Now, we would just like the U.S. government to come through with what they said they would do, interview them so they can get their boarding documents, and I've got enough money to get them all here.
You know, it sounds like you've really put yourself out for Ramal and now his family. It sounds like you've funded some of these efforts yourself.
I have, yeah.
Why do you feel compelled to help Ramal and now his family?
You know, I asked my dad one time, you know, why he joined the Marine Corps in World War II, and he said, well, he said, my country needed me. I was in a position to help, and so I did. And that's about, it just seems like I can help. I want to help. I'm getting old enough. I know I can't take it all with me, so why not?